First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Will two Florida men duke it out for the GOP nomination for president? Good morning. We're live from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, Donald Trump, as expected, has officially entered the 2024 presidential race. Let us know your thoughts about that. The lines are open. It's 549-2937. Then later, it's the middle of the week. We've got a roundup of what's good on our menu this Wednesday. That and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, former President Donald Trump, who tried to overthrow the results of the 2020 presidential election, officially entered the 2024 hustings last night with an announcement from his Mar-a-Lago resort in South Florida. So what does that mean for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and other presidential hopefuls and for the Republican Party? A.G. Gankarski of Our Own Jax Today and Florida Politics is on the line now with some thoughts. Good morning, A.G.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. And as we talk about last night's announcement, let us know your thoughts about the 2024 presidential race as Donald Trump officially files to run yet again. 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And you can always comment on Facebook, too. So, AG, this was not expected, this was not unexpected that Donald Trump, as soon as the midterms were over, would announce that he was running again. What was your initial reaction to the tone of the event last night at Mar-a-Lago?
It felt underwhelming as a whole. There weren't any real name Republicans on hand to support him. Everybody, even the nominal supporters, were elsewhere. They sent well wishings from places like D.C. or what have you, as Matt Gaetz did. And it felt like it was the greatest hits tour. A lot of stuff we've heard in rallies, both after he lost the election, before he lost the election, discursive speeches, rants and ramblings. Statements that weren't especially true or verifiable.
A lot of falsehoods. Yeah, lies.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you could spend all day fact checking Donald Trump and finding lies, and that's kind of the problem. It feels like he's run out of his audience has shrunk. Among the mainstream Republicans, the sort of conservative intelligentsia, the Fox News crowd. So the people that gave him wide berth before don't seem to be doing it the same way anymore. So you got to wonder if there's diminishing returns here, this third try at the presidency for Donald Trump. Three campaigns in a row, any product is going to get stale if you're marketing the same thing over and over again. And that's really the issue with Donald Trump. I mean, he's basically what marketers would call a mature brand, at least. And, he doesn't have that novelty factor anymore. And a lot of what he says, as we've said over and over, doesn't bear close examination, which, raises the question, what the Republicans want out of their party going forward. Do they want to relitigate the 2020 election? After seeing that didn't really help him much in the midterms. Donald Trump's tone, it was kind of fizzly, kind of flat, kind of played out.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a good kickoff.
Yeah, the Republicans lost the Senate in the midterms, and they are holding on to the House of Representatives by a slim margin. Virtually all of former President Trump's handpicked candidates for office lost in the midterms. At the same time as Florida Governor Ron DeSantis handily won re-election and is expected to run for president, he has brushed off the swipes that Trump has taken at him in recent speeches and statements. And so I think the question for all Florida political observers right now is, will these two men engage in a bruising primary battle?
I think eventually it could come down to that. What's clear is DeSantis is not going to engage. his rapid response person, Christina Peshaw, who gleefully punches down at media and at lower level politicians and at everybody else, has been radio silent on Donald Trump. The governor, he deflected questions yesterday at a press conference in Fort Walton Beach, talking about how you get that kind of thing if you're leading. And, you know, he's pointed to the scoreboard. He got supermajorities in the House and the Senate for Republicans, double-digit wins across the board in statewide races. Republicans had an election like they haven't had in many decades in Florida in 2022, and that was a contrast to a lot of other states. Not all other states, of course, because Georgia has a Republican governor, and, you know, it was a good night for Republicans in Georgia last week, except for Herschel Walker.
Not to cut you off, but does Donald Trump's announcement harm Herschel Walker in his runoff Senate election in Georgia against the current Senator Warnock, Raphael Warnock?
It doesn't help him. Because, you know, at a time where Walker's trying to make that case to consolidate, what's happening is you've got all this Republican fighting. You've got what's Donald Trump going to do? You got the fighting between Rick Scott and Mitch McConnell for leadership of the caucus. You've got a lot of meta discussion. And that you don't win elections with meta discussion. You don't win elections with circular firing squads. Democrats, they're united. They have the power of incumbency in that. Herschel Walker does not need Donald Trump running a presidential campaign in 2 years, distracting from what he's trying to do in overcoming a deficit to get over in a special election next month. Yet that's what Herschel Walker is dealing with. He's not a particularly adroit politician, as we've seen. And Donald Trump questions are just one more complication for a candidate who's not very good at running campaigns.
An operative who is good at running campaigns and a familiar name and face to many in Jacksonville, Susie Wiles, is one of the heads of Donald Trump's 2024 reelection bid or attempt to come back to the White House. She also worked for Governor Ron DeSantis and had a falling out with him. What about the Susie Wiles factor in all of this?
Well, you know, Susie Wiles knows a lot about Ron DeSantis' weaknesses from 2018. Knows a lot about his strengths from 2018 also. But she's been out of DeSantis' orbit for 4 years now. It was an acrimonious ending. Basically exiled by Casey DeSantis, the first lady. And, you know, she moved back over to Trump world where she's been since. I don't know how much Susie Wiles is going to, you know, matter in the end in the Trump versus the Sanders thing. It seems much bigger, and it seems that Donald Trump wants to be seen as calling his own plays. Wiles is a key figure. She's not campaign manager. And, you know, as you've seen from Donald Trump world, if you have a title, campaign manager, chief of staff, vice president, you'll get thrown under the bus sooner or later. So the thing you really want is that kind of non-nominal power that Susie Wiles has. I believe that she's going to be a factor, but, you know, Donald Trump's fingerprints are all over his campaign, and ultimately it's going to be up to what he decides subjectively. He makes these decisions often on the spur of the moment, often driven by emotion. It's what makes him a great entertainer. It's what makes him a chaotic leader.
All right, folks, let's go to your calls. Your reactions to last night's announcement that Donald Trump, once again, is running for president. 5492937. Jim in Riverside. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Well, if the competition between Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump materializes, I would have to say that Ron DeSantis maintains the advantage. As you said, Trump endorsed candidates across the country lost. The Republicans had an abysmal result in the midterm elections. Democrats may actually gain a seat in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And in the House, there's maybe going to be a 4 or 5 vote seat advantage for Republicans extraordinarily thin. Meanwhile, Ron DeSantis drew a map in Florida that delivered four additional Republican seats to Congress. So he can look at the Republican Party and say, you know, you have a majority because of me. I'm going to save you. In fact, I already have. But and Donald Trump's going to lose you a third election in a row. So I doubt the Republican Party will continue to brook Donald Trump's self-serving chaos.
Thanks, Jim. To be clear, the maps the governor forced through are being challenged in court as unconstitutional, but they do provide the Republicans a cushion in the House. AG, I think that Jim summed up the state of affairs pretty well. But if the base of the GOP is still with Trump, will big donors and big media figures like, say, Rupert Murdoch, will they eventually fall in line behind where the base of the party is, or will the base of the party finally say goodbye to Donald Trump?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to look at some of the early polling. And there's Iowa polling, there's New Hampshire polling. Club for Growth has done some recently. And what that polling is showing is that they are willing to go with DeSantis. Iowa, New Hampshire, Georgia, Florida. I've seen Texas polling that showed DeSantis up. And the people polled are the likely voters in these scenarios. So, and the polls haven't reflected that until after the midterm elections. I mean, something shifted in the last few weeks where, you know, you're seeing a tipping point with, you know, a considerable part of the Republican voting base saying, I'm willing to look at somebody else. And the problem for Donald Trump is, once people have moved on to a different product, it's hard to get them back. And what he showed Tuesday night was, it was the same playbook that he'd used previously. There wasn't really a new message. There wasn't really any new rhetorical appeal. There wasn't any real demonstration of what went wrong previously. No self-reflection seemed evident in that speech. So it feels like with Republicans want a little more honesty, a little less performance art, and that's where Ron DeSantis comes in, because, you know, Ron DeSantis, he's shown that Trump side. I mean, we've seen the Build the Wall ad that he made his kids build a wall in the 2018 gubernatorial campaign. We saw that. We saw the Trumpism, but, you know, on a dime, Ron DeSantis can also pivot to sound like, you know, a legal brief. That's not a gear that Donald Trump has. And, you know, the one problem here is that Ron DeSantis is not the only person who's going to be running. There's going to be a lot of Republicans.
Yeah, it'll be a crowded field. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people have books to sell.
Right. Not only that, I think the other big question we have is, will Joe Biden run again? With this announcement, I'd say the chances of that went up. But let's take... go ahead.
I would, too, because Biden... uniquely benefits from Donald Trump as a foil. A younger candidate presents a generational contrast that doesn't bode well for Biden. So he definitely wants Donald Trump to somehow get the nomination again.
Celeste in Palm Coast. Hi, Celeste.
Hi, yeah. Last time when they were doing all the Republican primaries, there was a lot of people in the field. And it seems like Trump has his hardcore, you know, people are going to follow him wherever they want, but you have a primary and we had some really good candidates, and then it split the votes and Trump came out ahead, and then someone fell off. Next one, Trump has his hardcore people primary. We have some really good candidates, split the votes, and Trump takes it. You know, how can we keep the viable candidate or responsible candidate, the one we want, going through when there's so many Republicans in there and Trump has this huge base?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is certainly going to be the dynamic through the primary season, Celeste. But that said, I think after the midterm results, AG, big donors on the Republican side, people behind the scenes that want to see the Republicans recapture the White House, they have been pretty vocal about the fact that they feel Donald Trump is a drag on the Republican Party in a way that we have not seen before.
Right. And Ken Griffin, who is DeSantis's biggest donor, has probably been the most vocal. So, you know, that gives you an interesting indication of where the energy is. DeSantis's biggest donor wants a change in the White House. So that could bode well. But the caller got to a really good point, and that's, you know, how does a candidate deal with the Trump attacks, deal with the Trump effect? It's impossible to put, say, a Ron DeSantis in display case for 2 years and say, please, Trump, don't hurt him, because that's not the way the game works. And Ron DeSantis knows it. Ron DeSantis basically said as much during his press conference yesterday, where he expects these attacks as a function of leadership. But there's no protecting a candidate from Donald Trump. They've got to be a better politician than him. They've got to knock the guy off the top, because he is still, despite what talking heads say, the leader of the party. It's a similar scenario to what Ronald Reagan faced in 1980 when, you know, there was a proposal floating Gerald Ford as sort of a co-president running mate. And, you know, obviously that was rejected. But, you know, these are the kind of things that get floated. And when you've got a former president who's still in the mix, who still wants to make noise.
And still has an accepted reality, which is that he lost the election. And he's still perpetuating the big lie, saying the election was stolen from him. Millions of Americans believe this falsehood.
Yeah, and that's the question. I mean, does he really believe that, or is this just a rhetorical position he takes to work his base? And I don't know which answer is a better one. It's always seemed kind of like a construct to me that he's manipulated to control the political process. And it feels like Republicans are starting to realize that, even if they can't say that out loud. I mean, every major Republican that we know has invested to some degree in the stolen election narrative, because, you know, they look the other way after January 6th.
That includes Ron DeSantis. He made noise about calling for alternate slates of electors during that whole time frame, although he hasn't spoken about it since.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, to these Republicans who decide late in the game that they all of a sudden have had enough of Donald Trump, you kind of have to wonder, you know, what are they going to say about their reaction post January 6th? I mean, Ron DeSantis' campaign may be an exit ramp from that kind of extremism, but it doesn't mean they don't have to explain it. It doesn't mean they're not legitimate questions. Are they questions that matter to Republican primary voters? I'm not sure, but if somebody who's not Donald Trump emerges as the nominee from the GOP, they're going to take questions. They're going to deal with Donald Trump's legacy, and they're going to have to, you know, repudiate it to some degree to make the case to general election voters. And that would cause cognitive dissonance for at least some of the Republican base. So it's an issue.
Lots of calls, emails, tweets, and feedback on Facebook as we speak with our contributor, A.G. Gankarski, about last night's announcement, Donald Trump running again for president. On Facebook, Mark says, you might see a lot of independents switch to Republican for this, I guess, to maybe have a voice in the primary. On Facebook, here's one for you, A.G. Trump's running because he knows that there are people out there who will send him money. He also believes that he thinks that running will insulate him from legal issues. Let's talk about those two things. The Save America PAC, which has raised somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 million, although his fundraising changes now that he's declared. Most of that money he has kept for himself. And Donald Trump is the subject of multiple state and federal investigations. Is he running to insulate himself from legal accountability?
Well, that's kind of a correlation causation question. It definitely benefits him to be running because it insulates him. But is that the sole reason? I don't think so. I think it just happens to be an ancillary benefit. This doesn't feel like a, I'm running for president to stay out of prison. This feels like I'm running for president because I think I can pull this off one more time.
Okay, Pedro in Pontevedra. Hi, Pedro. Good morning to you. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning to all of you. I have a question about the timing of the whole thing. It seems usually that when someone announces their run for an elected office, they do it in the proper season. You know, I didn't hear about Chris running until August, maybe June. But with Donald Trump, he's announcing his candidacy 2 years in advance. Is that something that's atypical? I mean, it always seems like when somebody runs for office, it's usually just a few months in advance, but 2 whole years. Mm-hmm. Is this something that's completely abnormal? Are there advantages to this, disadvantages to this? I was just curious to see about your thoughts on that, and I'll take my comments off later.
Thank you, Pedro. Some conservative commentators have noted, never Trump conservatives, e.g., that it's a sign of weakness for Donald Trump to announce this early. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with that. I mean, it's kind of, you know, you've heard the expression striking while the iron is hot. I mean, this feels like striking before the iron cools down. And, you know, Trump, he seemed to expect a red wave that didn't happen in this election. And, you know, he's actually getting in the race before the midterm election, which would have been even more ridiculous timing. But you're going to start a campaign 18 months before any election. I mean, that's what we see with gubernatorial campaigns in the state, and that's what we see with presidential campaigns. So Trump really expedited the time frame a few months. I don't know if that's necessarily significant, except that he's trying to keep the field clear and, you know, trying to basically play king of the mountain. But it feels pretty transparent, so I'm not sure if that's going to work with this field.
Ralph in Ocean Way. Hey, Ralph, what are your thoughts?
Hi, love your show.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering, who is Donald Trump going to get to be a running mate? I mean, Pence barely survived, and, you know, I can't imagine anybody with more than a fourth grade education wanting to jump on board with a Donald Trump campaign. Does he really have somebody in mind for that, or is he going to reach out to maybe to Russia to find somebody for him? You know?
A little humor from Ocean Way this morning. Thank you, Ralph. I have no idea. AG, you know, and he referenced Mike Pence barely surviving the insurrection on January 6th. Of course, Pence is expected to run again, and he's written a book, and I have no idea. That would be an interesting sideshow to all of this.
Yeah, I mean, someone like Carrie Lake, who just lost governor in Arizona and says the election was stolen, she'd be somebody maybe, or somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene or somebody like that. I mean, you can see the issues here. The people who would want to run with Donald Trump are from the right flank of the party. And Matt Gaetz, I'm sure, wouldn't turn it down. But in terms of, you know, a Pencean type figure who can say to the normie Republicans, hey, this guy's not completely off his rocker, which was Pence's role in 2016. I don't see that figure on the horizon right now.
Jerry in St. Johns County. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call. I really love your show, and I'm going to say something, and it's not really about you, but I just wish there was less attention on what Donald Trump does. Mm. I feel like the 2016 election campaign, all the press that, you know, was about him really gave him a lot of free exposure. Mm-hmm. So the news coverage and starting his campaign 2 years before the election is a lot. And we don't have to start the campaign now, and we don't have to, you know, have these debates as if this is all something normal.
No, I hear you.
Thank you.
And I appreciate that. Jerry, you know, the only reason we're really devoting so much time to it is because it is such an important Florida story. The announcement was made from Florida. The Florida governor is likely to run. But I appreciate what you're saying. And AG, the major networks, for the most part, did not carry the announcement live last night because they have been so heavily criticized over giving Donald Trump so much free media in the 2016 race. And so what about that?
I think that's part of it. But I think the other reason they didn't run wall-to-wall coverage is because it's not good TV. When Donald Trump started doing these rallies 2015, 2016, nobody'd seen anything like it. We'd gotten used to the Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan model of a Republican rolls up his shirt sleeves and looks really earnest as he says talking points from Club for Growth. And Donald Trump was a completely different type of performance artist. And his rallies got that kind of coverage in 2016 because they were a hot new product. Fast forward to 2022, and the novelty has worn off. Fox News cut away. CNN cut away, as Mayor Lenny Curry lamented on Twitter. That's kind of an indication that they are tuning Donald Trump out, which I think we've hit the high water mark of that uncritical coverage of Donald Trump as a phenomenon. And Trump knows that, and that's one of the reasons he made the preemptive move to normalize to a traditional campaign, because he realized being sort of a pre-candidate, he didn't really have any more leverage off it. So,
yeah. And
I think that's why he made the jump.
Here's another tweet. You need to talk more about kick-ass Democrats who took their states blue. Gretchen Whitmer, Wes Moore, and Katie Hobbs. Governors in other states like Michigan and, of course, the Arizona governor's race that you mentioned, AG. You know, and that's the other big factor, I think, for 2024. Florida got more red, but many other states rejected the Florida style of politics and turned more blue. They rejected the kind of brand of politics that is epitomized by a guy like Donald Trump. And so whomever becomes the Republican nominee in 2024 will have to contend with that.
Yeah, I mean, Florida is a unique dynamic. I mean, there was a really weak gubernatorial nominee. We didn't see a lot of enthusiasm among Democrats. The turnout gap between Republicans and Democrats was 15 points. So it's a unique thing. I mean, Ron DeSantis did not beat Gretchen Whitmer in his election. He beat Charlie Crist, and that's a different dynamic entirely. But, yeah, I mean, when I look at Florida, you know, Florida's been going to the right of the country for a little while. And a lot of that, especially happening during the DeSantis era, because people moved here because of COVID, because they were working from home or whatever. But you had kind of a self-selecting group that seems to have moved the state a couple points to the right. You couple that with the institutional advantages that Republicans have, including drawing maps to suit them, and you have a Republican, you know, fiefdom. But whether that can translate nationally, I don't know, because you don't see the same institutional advantages for Republicans anywhere else except Texas.
Well, it's always good to get your insights. Thanks, as always, for calling in, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
A.G. Gankarski of Our Own Jax Today and Florida Politics. And much more still ahead this morning. Later, why the greenhouse is the new hottest spot in town. We'll tell you about it, but up next.
Pole vault is at the highest levels, is a Paralympic sport, team sport for the blind and visually impaired. You have to at least be legally blind.
Florida fielding national champs in a sport for the visually impaired after this. Welcome back. Well, recently, an amazing sporting event was staged in our area. The National High School Goal Ball Tournaments happening at the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind in St. Augustine. I learned more about goal ball from Keith Young, the men's coach of the National USA goalball team.
Coach Young, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So tell us about the National High School Goalball Tournaments over the last weekend or so at the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind. Tell us about this.
Yes, so we hosted 17 teams across the United States at the 2020 United States High School Goalball Championships here at the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind on November 3rd through 5th. There were 9 boys teams and 8 girls teams that entered pool play, and the results were for the boys. Was Florida won the national championship, with the runner-up being Texas, and third place Arizona. And on the girls' side, we had Florida as the national champions, followed by Texas and Alabama.
Wow. Now, tell us about the sport of goalball.
Goalball is a, at the highest levels, is a Paralympic sport, team sport for the blind and visually impaired. You have to at least be legally blind. And basically, they take approximately a 3-pound ball, and they have a throwing and landing zone, and the players try to put the ball into the opponent's net, which is 30 feet or 9 meters wide. And they get down on their hands and knees, mm-hmm. and they block with their body.
So you're the head coach of the men's national goalball team. That's pretty impressive. Tell us about that.
Well, my roots started here at the Florida School of Deaf and Blind, coaching the boys team in 2015. And my mentor was a previous USA coach that retired after the 2016 game. So I was asked to serve a little bit more than a month before the 2019 Pan Am games down in Lima, Peru. And I got hired on after that. And we qualified for the Tokyo Paralympic Games, got fourth, and still coaching, and just looking forward to December is our world championships, and hopefully we'll get first or second and qualify for the Paris Paralympic Games.
That is so great. And can you talk a little bit about the importance of goalball for these athletes who are visually impaired, but this is a way for them to still demonstrate their skills and abilities and excel? Can you talk about the importance of goalball to this community?
Sure. It's the only Paralympic or para sport that's designed specifically for the blind and visually impaired. Basically, post-World War II, these two doctors out in Europe wanted to get some recreations, rehabilitation for recently blinded World War II vets, and it's just progressed into an international sport. And it's important to note that goalball is the only Paralympic sport that has not been adapted by an able body. It actually benefits that you're blind or visually impaired. And one of the cool things with our sport is, because some people can have up to 10% functional vision, whether it's acuity or visual field, they have to wear eye shades. So it keeps it on an even playing field, and you have to use your hearing and your tactile senses to play the sport.
Now, at the same time, the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind in St. Augustine is an amazing resource with a rich history in this area. And you are a shining light there. What's new at the school? And for people who aren't familiar with it, can you share a little bit about the curriculum?
So the curriculum, so basically for people who are blind and visually impaired, they have what's called the expanded core curriculum. And it's just things that they need to have in connection with their education. Things like orientation mobility. That's where they learn how to use white canes. They'll even be able to learn how to use like tactile maps. They use assistive technology, like braille writers that speak to them, to recreation and access to recreation, how to use their other senses, self-determination and advocacy skills. So that's what our school is, kind of like a one-stop shop, mm-hmm. as far as those who are blind and visually impaired to get these 9 areas of the expanded core curriculum.
That's great. And best of luck with all of the future goalball championships and games. It's really exciting to hear about this. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate you, Melissa.
Keith Young with the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind and coaching the men's national USA goalball team. Thanks.
Well, it's the hottest new spot in town, the Greenhouse and Bar, a lush new space filled with houseplants, cacti, and plant-related merchandise, not to mention coffee, wine-based cocktails, and beer. They just opened their doors in Brooklyn. Co-owner Lauren Henry is here to tell us more about the Greenhouse. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. So this is such a great place. What inspired the Greenhouse?
My partner and I, we met in the wedding industry, and we had a combination of a sangria truck and vintage furniture, and we both loved plants. So we started this journey about 3.5 years ago, kind of combining all the things. We wanted people to feel like when they walked into this space, they kind of walked into our living room, and they were welcomed with, like, you know, a warm hug or a smile and, you know, a comfort place.
Yeah. So all the things that make people feel at home.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And it's caught on. How gratifying is that?
It's kind of surreal. We haven't really had a chance to, like, sink in and you know, feel that yet because we've been so busy. But every day is getting a little bit easier, figuring out processes, getting our staff up to speed. But the last week has been incredible.
Now, the Greenhouse and Bar is at 200 Riverside Avenue in Brooklyn, which is just an exploding area. How happy are you with that location?
We're ecstatic. This was our third location that we had kind of settled into. And originally the owners of the building denied us. They didn't think we were worthy of that space. And so they came back and they gave us an opportunity. And, you know, for us, it's, you know, time to prove to them that they made the right decision. And we're super excited.
Is this the first time you have run a place like this, or had you done it before?
Brick and mortar, yes.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of mobile businesses. So we're finally able to, like, settle in and come to one space every day.
And what's different about doing a brick and mortar? What are the challenges that you're finding?
It's 7 days a week.
Never stops.
It doesn't stop now. There's no time off. And so we're learning that pretty quickly.
Now, you mentioned you've run mobile businesses.
Mm-hmm.
You had a mobile plant shop, the Greenhouse Bar mobile trailer, and it was stolen a few months ago from right in front of your house in Avondale.
Yeah.
That was a big setback, but you decided you're not going to let that slow you down.
No, it didn't happen at the best time. But as the bar was opening, we were slowing down with markets and not using it as much. And unfortunately, you know, we let our guard down in our neighborhood that we thought was safe. And somebody took it from us.
And no word yet on a culprit?
No, nothing.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear that.
It's okay.
But it's exciting to see you moving forward, and it's exciting to see the community embrace it.
Yes.
Do we all just need a comfortable place to go? I think that's what the answer is. We're all pretty stressed out these days, and you're meeting that need with a cool, comforting place.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people ask to move in already, so there's plenty of room in there.
Now, rents are really high these days for business owners opening up a new place. How are you dealing with that?
Actually, the owners of Vista have been amazing. They've given us, you know, a lot of leeway to start this business. And so we're taking the opportunity to really look towards the future financial aspect of it. With rent going up, also the price of things go up. So we're trying to account for that gap. And we're doing the best we can so far.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We'll see.
And the plants. Tell us more about the plants and why that's such a big part of what you're doing at the Greenhouse.
That was kind of the original vision, was to have these plants that you can purchase and take home and, like, create that warm feeling in your house. And with COVID, it exploded. The plant industry just blew up. And we took advantage of that opportunity and kind of dove right in and went to all these shows and expos and kind of just learned as much as we could. And now we're able to showcase that to the community, you know, 7 days a week.
Do you have a natural green thumb, or did you have to learn?
I had to learn. My partner is the one who cares for the plants. I'm doing the best I can.
But when you go into a place with a lot of live plants, it does create a real vibe. There's data to show it actually has a calming effect on human beings and animals. It makes a difference.
Yeah, you're breathing better air. You're able to talk about things with people in the bar instead of, you know, being on your phone. you're able to have a conversation about something that you wouldn't normally have.
Now, tell us about the cocktails, because you've got coffee, beer, pastries, and cocktails at the greenhouse. Tell us about the menu.
The cocktail menu was number one for me. With our license, we fall under that two-cup beer and wine license. So we wanted to get as creative as we possibly could. And we don't really care for, you know, the wine-based cocktails that are, you know, trying to mimic the gin and the vodkas. We wanted to do something, you know, more of like a European style. And so we brought on Matt Williams, who has extensive cocktail knowledge in the community, to help us create something with vermouths and aperitifs and amaros. And what we've come up with is something unique that Jacksonville just doesn't have yet. They're low ABV, but they really bring that flavor profile that you would get, you know, if you went out to a Grape and Grain or somewhere else.
If all of this is really sounding enticing, everybody, good news. We've got a giveaway from the Greenhouse and Bar. Now, this is a gift basket, right? A plant, T-shirt, stickers, some other fun stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice goodie bag.
Yeah, good, you know, array of things that we offer.
Okay, so if you'd like to win our giveaway from the Greenhouse and Bar at 200 Riverside Avenue in Brooklyn, just email us now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and put Greenhouse in the subject line, and we will pick one winner at random. So get those emails coming, and if you haven't dropped by the Greenhouse, drop by. Reservation's not needed, though, right? It's drop-in only?
Yep, just drop in.
Yeah. Lauren Henry, co-owner of the Greenhouse and Bar on Riverside Avenue in Brooklyn. If you're not sure exactly where that is, they're right next to the Fresh Market, right over there. We're already getting emails, so I'm so excited when we do giveaways. It's so fun to watch all the emails come in. And congratulations on all of your success.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you. So that's good, right? And up next, a lot more good stuff. It's our What's Good Wednesdays. And we have lots to share. So keep listening. We will be right back. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Don't go away.
Congaree & Penn, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpenn.com. Lee & Kate's Glass, family-owned and operated for 95 years. Lee & Kate's Glass is your source for upgrading your home's glass, from shower doors and mirrors to windows and tabletops. Learn more at leeandkatesglass.com.
JME Soundstage presents comedian Paula Poundstone, Saturday, December 3rd, 2022 at 7 p.m.
My son just turned 19. He's about to have surgery because he's going to play for foosball for his school this year, and he has to have the rod installed.
Best-selling author, frequently heard on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Paula Poundstone is one of America's funniest comedians. Don't miss Paula Poundstone, December 3rd. tickets and info at jacksmusic.org.
I'm Marco Werman. The world is full of stories.
Israel's never before been in a situation remotely like this.
So they put their hopes in China.
We have a massive aging population here in Europe.
When you arrive in Ghana, then you tell yourself, this is where I should be.
It's 1 hour each day when you get a global perspective. Join us on The World.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Equipped with new data from the midterms, both parties are trying to spin how well they performed with Latino voters. GOP officials say the numbers are trending in their favor, but Democrats argue voting patterns haven't changed much, and this group helped build the blue wall. We'll unpack the important and complicated Latino vote next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, this year, Family Support Services is working to fulfill Christmas wish lists for nearly 1,200 kids in foster care in our area. It's through their gift program called Be an Angel. Be an Angel runs through December 2nd, so you have time to drop off a gift for a child in foster care. For more, we checked in with Octavius Davis. He's Director of Community Engagement, Recruitment, and Grants with Family Support Services of Jacks.
Be an Angel, this is our 12th year doing Be an Angel here in Jacksonville for our kids in care. And I tell you, every year that we do this, it's always a mad dash for us as a team. But when we see the end result of us being able to provide for these 1,400 kids in care, it makes it all worthwhile. So many people don't realize, but children in care can actually be in care up until 23 years old. Now, that particular population we now refer to as transitional age youth, but nonetheless, they're still in care. And as an organization, we wanted to be able to help those young adults make the transition when they would typically age out of foster care. We wanted to help them be able to make that transition into adulthood successfully. So we created additional programs to still help them through the process. And this program supports them as well. So the way the program works, individuals throughout the community, businesses, organizations, and so forth, they're able to go to one of our websites, beanangeljacks.org, and they can let us know how many kids they'd like to sponsor for the holiday season. What then happens is we'll match that donor with one child and their three wishes, or if they want to sponsor multiple children and each of their three wishes, we provide them those kids' wish lists. Them and their families are able to go out and shop for these kids. And then the first week of December, all the donors bring those gifts to us at the designated locations. And us, along with our Santa helpers, so we sort through all the gifts, get them designated to the respective caseworker. And then about a week before Christmas, the caseworkers make a mad dash throughout the city to get those gifts dropped off to all of those kids in care.
So check that out, folks. Do your part to support Be an Angel at Family Support Services. You have till December 2nd to drop off a gift to a child in foster care. Well, here's some more good news for your midweek. We want to talk right now about a Black-owned organization created by three friends working to revive local Black-owned culinary businesses. Black Restaurant Week Jacksonville has joined the national tour, and the Palette Pleasing Showcase runs until Sunday, November 20th. Founded by Warren Luckett, Flyin' Farrell, and Derek Robinson, Black Restaurant Week is the organization in our city responsible for celebrating the flavors of African-American, African, and Caribbean cuisine with a series of regional cultural events. But here's the easiest way you can be part of it. Patronize local Black-owned restaurants. Here's just a few. Mr. Potato Spread, that's a good one. Shut 'em Down Authentic Southern Restaurant. That Lemonade Cafe. Tough Guys Cookies and Sweets. The Avenue Grill. Funnel Cake Queen. Little Black Box. The new Peach Cobbler Place over on Roosevelt Road. And I gotta say, this one's my personal favorite, the Mixed Fillings Pie Shop. They're going to add more restaurants to the list. And last year, the organization supported more than 1,000 Black-owned culinary businesses across the U.S. and Canada. and generated an average of a 15% sales increase. Pretty cool. Well, the 13th annual McKenzie's Run is expected to be bigger and better than ever this year as the Boys and Girls Clubs of Northeast Florida celebrates their 60th anniversary. This is a popular, family-friendly 5K and one-mile fun run, drawing more than 1,000 people to help create futures, good futures, for local kids and teens. Runners and walkers will enjoy a beautiful race route through the Players Stadium course at TPC Sawgrass, an exciting after party with live music, food, and more. All proceeds benefit the 48 local Boys and Girls Clubs across our area, serving nearly 5,000 young people. And it's part of their Great Futures Weekend, which also includes the second annual Great Futures Golf Classic, held Friday, November 18th at the Players. So check out the 13th annual McKenzie's Run. And finally, UNF's Opera Theater is giving two performances of its fall 2022 production of Mozart's comic masterpiece, Così fan tutti. These performances are free, open to the public, and even have English subtitles of this Italian story. The shows are Friday and Sunday at UNF's Robinson Theater. Fans of period dramas like Bridgerton or Pride and Prejudice are going to love this. You are even invited to dress in formal opera attire of suits and gowns with refreshments before the show and at intermission. Last year, the UNF Opera Theater put on its first ever season, and they want you to know they're the only full-staged opera production between Charleston, South Carolina, and St. Augustine. So check out Così fan tutti. I love saying that, at UNF this weekend. Two performances. We will close with some Mozart from the production. And if you have a little tasty item to add to our weekly Wednesday menu, drop me a line at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks to our team, David Luckin, Heather Schatz, Brendan Rivers, Isabella Da Silva, Gary Autry, Michelle Corum, and everyone here at WJCT News. I'm Melissa Ross. Make it a great day. We'll see you at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.